Want to hear more? With your Amazon device or Alexa app, say, Alexa, play country farm sounds, and escape to a mid-1900s farm where you will take a walk during the morning chores.
This is the Friday, March 29, 2024 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. USDA issued two reports on Thursday with the goal of giving traders and farmers guidance on expectations of planted acres and quarterly stocks. It is not the last word on what could happen in 2024, but as one of our market analysts likes to say, it is the word of gov. To digest the report are three of our analysts. We'll get to those three in just a moment. But first, USDA said less corn will be planted, and there is still a large supply of grain on the farm. First, the numbers for a shortened trading week. The nearby wheat contract added 6 cents, and the May corn contract gained 3 cents. Some of those new acres will be switching to soybeans. The May soybean contract lost a penny, while May meal dropped $1.40 per ton. May cotton shrank by 15 cents per hundredweight. Over in the dairy parlor, April Class 3 milk futures fell 4 cents. The livestock market was mixed. June cattle cut 265. May feeders shed 508. And the April lean hog contract improved 205. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index strengthened 7 ticks. May crude oil added $2.25 per barrel. COMEX gold expanded $56.20 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index increased almost 8 points to settle at 582 even. Our panel is here on this early taping of the program. We are going to dissect the crop production and the supply and demand reports. Jeff French is the founder of Ag Hedgers. Don Rose is the CEO of U.S. Commodities, Inc. And Sean O'Leary is president of Hawkeye Commodity Brokers. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Don, you get the first question. What's your headline from Thursday's report?
Well, I think in the big picture of things, you say the big bear market that we had since last fall is on hold, and the deflation of the prices is also on hold. And looking forward, it's all up to weather now. And the price action that we had on Friday proved that out, Paul.
Jeff, do you think it is a turn of the page or just a blip on Thursday?
Well, if you look at the corn market, it's a turn of the page technically. I mean, we closed above the 50-day moving average for the first time since October 22nd. So, you know, I said it last time on the show, these fund managers short 250,000 contracts, I think they're going to be a little bit more uncomfortable over the weekend with that big technical gain in corn.
Sean, do you have a different headline for the report?
I'd say no. I think Don has a good point that we've been in a bear market prior to these last few weeks, and it takes quite a bit for that scenario to change. I think a producer's got to be in the mindset of being kind of a scale-up seller, either on paper or cash.
Well, let's stick with corn then. Because I guess my argument before we started taping was, didn't the stock number saying that there's so much corn still left on farm, that was not bearish enough to outweigh the bullish acres?
Yeah, I mean, that had more than one bullish story to it today. And, you know, that's biggest net change higher that we've had in several months and a sizable range on the day, so.
Don, do you get the sense that this will be enough to pry those bin doors open?
Well, let's look at it. You talk about the stocks numbers. As of March 1st, the farmer still had 5 billion bushels, 60% of the corn in storage of the 8.3 billion. So I think the farmer is out here on hold looking for a place to sell grain. Obviously, nobody wants to own two crops when you hit the 1st of September. So, you know, I think it's a market. We've got a key reversal in the corn market, Paul, from back in February. The technicals are positive. The funds are short. You're going into a weather next week here. It's going to come at us very fast. Then we have the Safrina corn crop that we're watching too. So no, typically we add risk premium to a market going in the spring, and I suspect that's what we're doing.
how long does that risk premium last?
Well, you know, I think it goes, it's like a card game. I always say this business, you know, we'll see how the cards come out. We'll see what the weather looks like. But typically, I'd say into the middle of May, because there's still a lot of nervousness there. But the producer, I think, has a lot to say about it. When does he start to put grain in the pipeline?
Jeff, are you putting grain in the pipeline yet?
I think there was some. I mean, we're 40 cents off the contract lows. You look at the volume on Thursday, they traded over 330,000 contracts in corn in the May contract alone. I mean, that's three times the normal volume that we've seen in the last month. So absolutely, I think the funds were buying back some of their short positions. But also, I fielded many calls that producers with, you know, 50, 60 cent positive basis were selling $5 cash corn. And you can't stop them from that.
Sean, that's the old crop story. Talk to me about the new crop story. Did that change anything for you in Thursday's report?
I don't think so. The nearby contracts gained a little more than the deferred. I think that's a positive for the old crop. I just think we're kind of entrenched price-wise, minus this recent rally in a pretty bearish-looking market. And I think, as I said, producers, I think, would be wise to be scale-up sellers. $5 corn seems like a long time ago.
Did the phone ring then today with people thinking that it was time to move some stuff?
A little bit, yep.
Should it be ringing louder?
I think you have to treat it as a second chance at a previously missed opportunity.
Jeff, you did a little math, back of the napkin math I saw on X about where the acres are disappearing from in corn. Where do you see them?
Well, the beans are going to gain some, but if you look at the aggregate of all principal crops compared to last year, we're down 6.3 million acres. So, you know, my opinion would be that, you know, if we do have a dry spring and the planters can continue to roll, you know, you could see some corn acres increase. I mean, if you look at the I states, Indiana, Iowa, Illinois, they're down 950,000 acres of corn. Minnesota's down 700,000 acres of corn, estimated. So I think Mother Nature will dictate it, but you could see maybe some more corn acres here this spring being planted.
Do you buy that, Don?
Well, you know, I think when you look at it, where did all the acres go? And I think, we lost about, 4.9 million acres. 1 million of those we know went to CRP acres, and the rest of them, the fringe, Texas, Kansas were each down 5% on acres. But remember, last year we had start out at 92 million acres. We ended up at 94.6. So last 2 years, these acres are going to change a lot. I guess that's what the market's trying to do, see if we can buy some corn acres.
Let's go fringe acres for a bit, Sean, and let's go back to the wheat market for a bit. Did we see the fringe areas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, change any of their intentions with corn or wheat?
I think when you're talking about those areas, going back to what Jeff said about the I states, you can't write it off, obviously, but those aren't... those aren't the prime states where you're going to really see a difference in production.
What do you see for wheat producers that came as positive news, or was it negative news for them?
I think that was pretty quiet for the wheat market today.
No surprises for you there?
No.
Okay. For you?
I just think the crop conditions, I mean, they're much better than we've had here recently. So I think that's generally good. I mean, they're going to have a pretty good going crop right now.
You know, you're talking about the wheat acres. The soft red winter wheat acres were down like 600,000 acres. Hard red winter wheat was up like 300,000 acres. So, you know, there's a movement around on the wheat acres. And overall, wheat acres are down. But soft red wheat balance table probably tightens up, if I had to guess.
But let's look at the global picture, because Russia, again, large crop, then you have war issues, Ukraine, there's this continued global story. So is there any, does the U.S. wheat farmer need to just turn off the global news with their crop and just focus on domestic news?
Well, it's all about Russia and their selling ability. And remember, you know, we went to $13 wheat on a big Black Sea fight. So, you know, when you're down at this area, $5.50, $6 on soft red wheat, you know, you have to respect that what could happen. And wheat market really followed the corn higher today. So, you know, there's going to be issues around the world. I mean, the Black Sea has some dryness right now. And, you know, we've got a long way to go with our crop too, Paul.
Anything else on wheat? I kind of put you in a corner. I painted you there earlier.
That's all right. I don't have a lot of wheat,
that's
wheat
fine.
Customers, honestly.
Well, then let's start with soybeans then. Mm-hmm. What did you see out of the report today that was of interest to a soybean producer?
You know, pretty quiet. All the numbers on beans, unlike corn, were kind of in the neighborhood, and you saw that, you know, just down a few cents on the day. And price-wise, we're about where we were a week and a half and two ago on the bean market. So, you know, I think that's kind of mirrors what the corn market has done the past half a year or so. Been pretty weak.
Well, I have a question. Let's see. I'll let Don answer this one. This one comes from Adam in Michigan. He submitted it via X. And he says, with the potential to increase soybean, got to figure out where I'm at here. This is really small. Forgive me. With potential to increase soybean crush in the U.S. over the next decade, how long before corn acres might be pushed? Also, will the dry subsoil indicators across the Midwest lead for an optimistic outlook for a spring rally in the new crop commodities? Handle the first one about this crush story. And how's that being factored in by the government, like in reports today?
Well, I think what he's alluding to is we've got a lot of crush plants coming on board for the biodiesel plants that are expanding greatly. And, you know, the government's crush number is probably about 30 million too low. The export's probably 30 million too high, so-called a zero-sum ball game. But, you know, I think that's a great growth area, actually, Paul. And, I mean, biodiesel, I think, is going to go just like ethanol did. We're running a huge percentage of our demand is from corn ethanol, and I think that's where soybean oil goes also. Bottom line, I think for the soybeans, watch the oil. Oil's going to tell you if beans are worth $13 or $11.
Jeff, take the second part of that question, then. Let's talk weather. It rained in the Midwest this week. That's headlines. It was winter blizzards, Minnesota and the Dakotas. Is that enough of a story to move markets?
Well, I think the bean market, the biggest story this week was AgroConsult down in Brazil raised their crop estimate down there. They're up to 155 million metric tons. They increased that size by 150 million bushels. So they have a good crop coming on right now. They're 70% harvested. It's moving south down in Argentina. If you combine all the countries, South America down there, I mean, we're looking at probably 215 million metric tons of beans. I mean, you're talking almost 8 billion bushels. So we're quickly increasing the pipeline on the bean supply.
Who's buying the beans, though, outside of this country? Do we know yet, Sean? Who's interested in our beans? I mean, do we have a good enough market to prop up, to catch up to the export expectations?
I think that's going to be a battle for our bean market with the competitiveness or lack thereof with South American prices and their numbers.
Do you see a day where we're back into the teens at all in beans in 24?
Weather is going to dictate that, I think. I talked to somebody about corn today, and I just said, you know, $5 corn seemed like a long time ago. And I think that's going to be the case for both of those markets, absent a real weather hiccup.
I'll put you out there, too. Beans in the teens, possible at all this year?
Well, you know, I think, Paul, when you look at this, I think the whole world has kind of changed. I mean, our production, our input costs are much different than they've been. So your break evens at some place in time, you know, you're going to look at what is your real break even, and other countries are just not going to be able to produce at the same level. So hopefully that's where we go eventually. You know, you talk about AgriConsult. One of the reasons that their production was so much higher on soybeans is because they took their acres up 3 million versus CONAB. You know, is that really possible on one report? So, you know, it's... but anyway, I think, you know, this expansion around the world, it's going to come down to what's the profitability.
The story always with beans in South America specifically is the extremes of the tales that we get. Oh, whoa, it's so bad. Oh, glee, it's so good. Where's the middle right now with South America's crop? You just mentioned there's discrepancies among people whose livelihoods are reporting this thing.
Well, not only livelihoods, we've got the USDA and the CONAB, which is their USDA, they're off. The difference between those two is about 370 million bushels. So, you know, who comes closer? So, you know, I think you have to get that discrepancy solved by the government first before the rest of us can solve it. Because let's face it, everybody has good analysis, but you always look at the governments to see what they have.
Did you see Jeff's head almost pop off when he was agreeing with you? Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the discrepancy between USDA and CONAB is bigger than our carryout. So it's a big disagreement between the two governments.
What do you look for in South America? I mean, I get their opinions about that. What's yours?
I typically look at USDA being a government entity, not always that efficient. I think some of the private forecasters are a little bit more accurate, both in South America and our own hemisphere.
Do you see the possibility that is what is going to provide us, as there continues to be a discrepancy, a wider trading range? Or is that going to make us more in a narrow trading range because of the inconsistent?
I would say it would add to the volatility, probably, yeah. There's, you know, anytime there's uncertainty, it's typically you're going to see a bullish reaction. And even though that's a wide discrepancy in total numbers, it could actually be a positive for the market.
Did cotton gain at all in this report?
On the acres?
Yeah.
They were...
As a general statement.
Their acres were about the same. They were up like 440,000 acres.
I should say, that a positive for cotton because they didn't lose acres is probably what I should
say. Well, you know, cotton is a lot higher compared to the other. You know, would have thought they would have. I mean, people thought the acres were going to go up a million plus on cotton. It didn't happen. I think it's just an expensive crop to plant. So I think they're just like, okay, is the price going to stay here?
And labor intensive. I mean, you got to spray that crop 9-10 times a year. So the rally's been in the front month. December has done nothing. It's between 81 and 83 cents during this entire rally. So we're just not seeing it. There's some guys calling for 12 million acres. We'll have to see how this plays out.
As we put a close on grains, is there any story that you think we missed? No, we got it. Did we get it? Did we nail it? What do you have, Jeff?
You know, the on farm storage, we still have 24% more grain in the bins than we did this time last year. I think that story will continue to dampen rallies or, slow them down at least.
The only thing I had is, you know, the bear market is on hold. This report gave it a breather. We'll see if it can turn into anything bullish.
Do you get concerned about the long? I mean, we're not trading Friday. We have these issues where sometimes people start talking and things change on Monday.
Right. That's a possibility. I think in the case of corn, you see a rally like today, and you've got to go back to that large net short position. That doesn't all get flipped over in one day. I think you're going to see some follow through buying on short covering at a minimum. But I'm telling my producers, be a scale up seller for the time being. Last year you had an opportunity early, and it was brief.
And that has kind of been the story a lot lately, has been this brief window. Don, this week, HPAI shows up in dairy cattle in a couple of states. What is that going? Does that have any reverberations in the live cattle market or the feeder market?
When you look at it, I mean, the cattle industry just can't get back past the black swans. It seems like every time we've got this bull story, we get hit again. But, you know, basically, I think we'll have to see what happens. I mean, so far, what does it do? It throws the dairy calf cattle off of feed. It makes them dry up. Does that push over further into the north, into the cow herd? That's a concern. But the real concern is with the publicity, 24-hour news cycle, does it slow demand down?
Cattle break $10, milk stays steady. That to me.
That's what I was looking at.
I mean, it's just big business right now in the cattle business. I mean, you got to have downside protection. I mean, plain and simple.
We had on Tuesday, futures were still trying to find some market. It's been a futures cash story. Did futures finally make some headway in becoming a little more attractive to people?
Well, we sold record cash cattle prices last Thursday. 190, 194. And ever since that, we've gone straight down. I mean, we're down $10. Now we come back here off the lows a little bit here Thursday to close out, but close below the 20 and 50 day moving average. Funds long probably still 50,000 contracts. And, you know, the funds don't care about fundamentals. They care about technicals and money flow. So we'll see if it holds in there. The 100 day moving average held this week. That was good to see. But again, it just, we're still within $7, $8 of the highs. Good time to be putting some protection here.
Are we pausing before a rally higher back in live cattle?
I think it'll have a fairly good support on dips. It's definitely got the volatility both on the up and the downside recently. I've got a customer that called me last week and said, give me a quote on, I think it was an August feeder cattle, $300 call. And he sold it for $1.75. I thought, I heard the number and I thought, that just doesn't even sound right, but there it was.
What do you think when you hear a story like that?
Well, you know, I think the cattle industry, I think everybody knows, is bullish. I mean, actually, realistically, if you figure it out, it's going to take almost 4 years to start to rebuild the herd. So I don't think it's about the supply side. I think it's about the demand. What's the economy look like as we go forward? What's the demand when you look at pork prices, poultry prices, fish prices?
A guy you know well, Mark Gold, was in that chair last week, and he made a statement that he doesn't see beef demand slowing. He says his steak restaurants are still full. I think you've said something similar. But then online, we had a couple of arguments back and forth to his comment that they don't buy that. Is it, again, a view, a mixed view of who's up and who's down in the economy when it comes?
Well, I mean, domestic demand has been great, and I totally agree that the if this market does move lower, it's not going to come from the supply side of the argument. It will come from the demand or the headline risks that we've seen out here. And we saw it here this week. So, you know, again, very tight numbers. We have all-time high prices out here. How long we stay here, that's a big question. And, you know, nobody knows the answer to that.
Anything different in feeders that you see?
Well, the only thing I'd bring up is what you see with the S&P. There's, I think, some fear that if you see a break in that market, that might be a time when you see a break in the demand side of the cattle.
And I guess I go back to what Don said about headline numbers. When you see a 100-point loss in one of those markets, you think it's a big deal. But it's since we're trading so high, it's not that big of a deal anymore. So the headlines that get fed into the algorithms kind of change things.
Right.
You know, the
right.
only other thing I'd say about when you're talking about the cattle business, in January, Brazil's imports, exports to the U.S. were up almost 50%. So, I mean, price around the world will change things also. So you got to watch everything.
Pigs report, hogs and pigs here came out on Thursday before we taped. What was in that report, Sean?
I think all hogs and pigs was up 2%. I don't really recall what they were looking for.
So what does that report tell you then?
Looked pretty tame. I think all the estimates were kind of in line. No big surprises really.
You know, I think, you know, we're on a pretty big rally in the hog market, and I think the summer months are positive, but all hogs and pigs, you know, we're up 1% versus what the trade estimate. You know, the pigs per litter, it's amazing. We just continue to be, they compensate for the breeding number. So overall, I think the hog market, the bull story, I think, in the hogs is down in 2025 because we've had this liquidation that's eventually comes home to be a positive, Paul.
Agree with that one?
Summer months have plateaued up here. We've got above 100 a couple weeks ago, traded quickly up to 104, 105, and it kind of feels like we've hit a kind of a little bit of a ceiling up here. Friendly hogs moving forward here, but when you look at some of the margins that you can lock in as a producer in this June, July contract, can't help but get some locked in up here.
Do you feel more positive about the cattle or the hog industry right now? In the next, I'll give you 6 months.
I'll say the hog right now. I mean, just from the number standpoint, the second quarter on the cattle side, we will be dealing with the most animals of the year. And now the numbers do get tighter down the road, but I think we've seen the liquidation in the hogs. I think they're going to be supported here.
I'll make you stick it too. do you feel more optimistic about hogs or cattle here in the next 6 months?
I think I do a little more optimistic on the hog market. I think it looks a little bit more attractive. The cattle, you know, it's one of those things where everybody talks about the same thing, and it doesn't always pan out.
Have you been watching the show a little too much? Sean O'Leary, everybody, thank you very much, Sean, and thank you, Don Rose.
Thank you,
Jeff French. Good to see you all. And we are going to pause this analysis and continue our discussion about these markets in our Market Plus segment. You can find both analysis and plus on our website of markettomarket.org. We are so close to our goal of 10,000 YouTube subscribers. Help us cross that threshold. As you can stay current on new releases from us and episodes, the MTOM podcast, and news stories, hit subscribe at youtube.com/markettomarket. Next week, we look at the battle with feral hogs, and Christy Von On Cheeseth joins us to share her views of the markets. Thank you so much for watching. Have a great week.